Welcome to Prophecy Radio, the Percy Jackson podcast that will keep you up to date on all things Rick Riordan and Rick Riordan Presents, including upcoming books, adaptations, and more. This is episode number 126. My name is Karen.
I'm Kristen.
And we're back again.
Woohoo!
3 times in a row.
We are going to celebrate every one of these for a while because we're just getting back in the groove.
Yes.
And it's kind of near the holidays, so it's hard to like stay in the groove because you're like, I've got so much going on.
But. Yeah. Today almost didn't happen because I don't feel very good, but I was like, no, I think I can do it. It'll be okay.
Power through here.
Yeah. Gotta do it for the rabid fans.
Thank you, guys. We appreciate you. We really do.
What's new? Trying to think of what's new. I saw Red One recently. It was really good. I really liked it, honestly. Chris Evans, whenever he can use his Boston accent and be kind of a jerk, I just really enjoy that. So,
I forget where it's at. It might be on Prime. I'm not sure. There's a Girls Gone Wild, like, documentary.
Okay. I was like, where is this going,
nope,
Kristen?
Nope, not watching Girls Gone Wild. No, promise, no. No, there's a documentary about Joe Francis, the guy who was behind it, like,
the guy
who invented, came up with Girls Gone Wild.
Yeah.
And it's wild. Like,
really?
Just all the stuff that he kept getting away with because something would go wrong in the, like, in the court case that was supposed to bring him down because they had all this evidence. They found out that, like, this one cop did something he wasn't supposed to and it negated all the evidence, and then he escaped, and then, you know. So it's like watching the confluence of events that, like, was Girls Gone Wild and all the stuff that happened and, you know, the things he should have been found guilty for and slipped away on because of one stupid little thing or this other, you know, legal loophole. It's crazy, but it was really interesting.
Yeah, we'll probably have to watch that because we love documentaries, and especially, not that that's like super niche, but like Kevin loves like really random super niche like sports that nobody's ever heard of that there's like this weird world tournament or something, like just really like random specific things like that.
Well, and if you want the full gamut of the documentaries we watch, we also watched the one on Martha Stewart.
Oh, was that
interesting? It's a three-parter. Very interesting, because I did not know very much about Martha Stewart's life. Like, she was a model in her young days.
Really?
Like, she was, yeah. So, like, there's a lot of things I did not know about Martha Stewart. And
was Snoop Dogg in the documentary?
In the third part.
Okay.
Because the first part is, like, her early life. The second part is, like, what went wrong and, like, how things kind of happened. And then the third part is, like, the court case and after and kind of how, where she is now and how she got to where she is now, kind of.
Yeah.
But yeah, so we found out how she met Snoop Dogg, because Alex was like, how did those two end up together?
Yeah.
Like, where did that happen? Because they had to have met happenstance somewhere, and you won't believe where they met.
Really? Okay.
The roast of Justin Bieber.
Serious?
She was on the stage for the roast. It was like her first big thing after she got out of prison.
Oh my god.
And that she sat next to Snoop, and like that is where they started a friendship.
I love that so much.
Yeah. So it's a really interesting documentary if you are at all interested in Martha Stewart.
Yeah.
And I mean, I have a very passing interest. I am not a Martha Stewart follower, but Alex.
I think I'm more interested in Snoop Dogg than her, but their friendship is like super interesting.
Yeah, but yeah, so it was really interesting, and that just, my husband has all kinds of...
Husband?
I know, I still do it too. It still takes me a minute to not say boyfriend, because he's been boyfriend for a couple of years. He has a very wide range of interests when it comes to docs. Like, he'll watch stuff on, you know, abandoned building kind of things, you know, any celebrity. He recently read Kelly Bishop's book,
Who is
Lorelai Gilmore.
Oh.
Or not Lorelai, but Emily Gilmore. Sorry.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
the
okay.
mom, the grandma. Love her. He's been a big Gilmore Girls fan forever. And he's not a huge reader, but he did the audiobook because she read it.
Oh, okay.
And he was like, that was incredible. Like, really good. So that's kind of on my list. I've got a million romance books, of course. But when I'm ready for, like, autobiography, I'm going to Kelly Bishop's
I feel
book.
Like that's something you would, like, regardless.
Oh, absolutely.
But, yeah. I feel like we watched a really kind of wild documentary recently, and I don't remember what it was. Might have to get back to you guys on that, because we watch a lot of them, and There was one that was, like, intense through the whole episodes. I think the last, like, non-fictional thing we watched was, what was it called? Like, the secret, the unknown serpent of Bolivia or something, because my boyfriend loves reptiles, and yes, he loves snakes, and it was a really interesting documentary about the vipers in Bolivia, and it was pretty good.
Oh, and I've also now seen Band of Brothers. I had not seen it.
Band of Brothers.
It's the World War II 101st Airborne, like, paratrooper wing, and, like, the whole, it follows this one band, like, this one division, I don't know what they call it, but it's literally just following them through the war, and it was really good. I had never seen it. We started it, like, for Veterans Day. I had promised him for Veterans Day we will watch Band of Brothers. And it was really good. It was, you know, had some gory, it's war, so yeah, not, it doesn't sugarcoat war, it's pretty bloody, but really well done, and yeah, very interesting.
Yeah. We watched The Expendables last night, which I had seen before and he had not. And I stand by my initial reaction that it is not a good movie.
No.
And I love terrible action movies, and it was not good. For how many stars are in that movie, you would think it would be better.
It's terrible.
Yeah, I do want to watch the second one, though, because I don't think I ever did. And it is rated slightly higher than the first one, so, like, I'm willing to give it a shot. But Jason Statham remains the best thing in that movie. But, I mean, it's Statham. Like, yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Right.
So. Anyway, we should probably get back to Percy Jackson. If you have any documentary recommendations, any movie recommendations, let us know. You can contact us at Prophecy Radio Podcast on Instagram or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. We are trying to do a good job of keeping up with those. I do want to jump into news and updates right now. We don't have any more casting news, unfortunately, because we did kind of round it all up in the last one. But we do have two kind of bigger pieces of news to talk about. The first one are the Chosen Family Emmy nominations, and then the other one is the November blog update that Rick posted on his website that I thought had a couple of good pieces of information in there. So to start off with, Percy Jackson and the Olympians on Disney Plus got 16 Children and Family Emmy nominations, including Outstanding Young Teen Series.
Insert sound effect of crowd cheering. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really exciting, and I'm really hoping, like, I'm not familiar with a lot of the other shows on there, so I don't really know how they're rated, how people, you know, are receiving them, but I would be pretty surprised if Percy Jackson doesn't win most of these, just because it is just such a quality show.
Agreed.
But I wanted to run through real quick some of the other ones that they were nominated for. So you have Supporting Performer, and both Adam Copeland as Ares and Lance Reddick as Zeus are up for the award, which I think is really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Younger Performer is Leah Jeffries as Annabeth Chase, which I thought was, like, really interesting that, like, Walker wasn't on there, but again, Leah, I mean, she's incredible. She deserves it.
Yeah.
So that would be really amazing if she got to win an Emmy for that. Holy crap.
Right.
Writing and directing for I Accidentally Vaporized My Pre-Algebra Teacher. So that's the first episode.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. And then you also got music direction and composition for a live-action program, which I think makes a lot of sense. And show open. So do you know what that means exactly? Is that like the cold open on a show?
My assumption?
I probably should have Googled this before we started.
I don't know if I've ever really paid a ton of attention to the Children and Family Emmys. So I'm guessing show open, does that... I'm wondering if it has something to do with, like, the credit sequence.
I was wondering that, too.
That's a new category for me. I've never heard of show open.
Yeah.
I wouldn't think it has to do with, like, a cold open, because that's just content. Like, you would, that would be writing, that would be,
yeah,
you know, like, that sort of thing.
Unless there's, like, something specific about, like, being able to hook the viewers with the cold open kind of thing.
Yeah.
Okay, we did some research off air and came up with what we think is the answer. So this is from the Emmys.tv, so I'm pretty sure it's right. And this is something new that they're doing now. So it lists this as like a little category, main title. And then beneath that, it says main title and graphics is now called show open and is inclusive of the opening music and or opening theme songs. Opening music slash opening theme songs are therefore no longer eligible within the original song categories. So basically it's just like the title, you know, the graphics, like
opening credits.
Yeah.
Anything like that.
All of that together. So that's another category that they're up for, which, I mean, I think, again, they've got a really good shot at.
Oh, yeah. And we learned something new today, which yeah. is always important.
It is.
I've never heard of a show open award, but I think it's a new way of kind of making the whole opening credits sequence one thing, right. as opposed to being nominated for the visual effects for the opening sequence and the sound, the original song, and this and that, you know. Like, that makes a lot of sense, actually, so that's cool. And you can kind of award all of the people who came in to create that thing, like all of the creatives who came together to make it, all kind of get awarded for how that all works together, which is neat.
Yeah, definitely. They also are up for cinematography for a single camera live action program, as well as editing, sound mixing, and visual effects, which, again, I think the music, the mixing and everything was really good in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Casting, another great one. Art direction, set direction, scenic design. I mean, they've got a really good shot at that because it's been incredible. Hairstyling and makeup. And then lastly, stunt coordination, which I love seeing.
Oh, yeah.
So that's really exciting. A lot of really great things. They could walk away with a handful of Emmys from this, which I think is really fantastic.
And just kind of like scrolling through some of the other nominees in this category, just because I'm not really familiar with the Children and Family Emmys, it looks like a lot of one-off things from maybe like Disney, like some of their original movie kinds of things.
Oh.
Because what did I recognize The Santa Clauses, which is like the new Disney Plus show.
Right.
About from the same world as like the Tim Allen movies.
Yes.
Yes. Took me a minute to find his name in my head. It was back there. But yeah, so it kind of looks like sometimes you're getting people who are like in one-off movie kinds of things, or stuff like Fraggle Rock and Sesame Street are nominated in some of these, but like, yeah, it's interesting. I never knew much about the Children and Family Emmys, but I feel like we're about to become experts.
Yeah.
Over the next, what, 5 years?
Yeah. I think for some of these, like One Piece, I know some people really liked that show, and things like Goosebumps, and I feel like, didn't they have, what was that one show that a few of the cast members are in? The scary one.
Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah, I feel like I might have seen that on here
okay.
as well. Unless I'm getting it mixed up with Goosebumps. But that one could potentially...
So yeah, it's those types of programs. I mean, obviously they're children or family programs. But like, yeah, it's interesting to see how many of them there are and what gets nominated. There's a bunch of nominations on here for The Raven's Home, which is the That's So Raven, like, spinoff show. And High School Musical, The Musical, The Series, which is ridiculous as a title. stuff like that. Yeah, so a lot of good stuff. But I think Percy has a very good chance of coming out on top here. We'll have to see.
Yeah, Spiderwick Chronicles, I feel like, could potentially get some. And Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, if you guys haven't watched that on Disney Plus, that's also very good.
The only reason I think Spiderwick Chronicles might not have as good a fare is because it airs on Roku Channel, which I feel like a lot of people don't have access to.
Yeah.
So it could, you know, it could hurt it a little bit. But yeah, I'm excited for them. So excited.
Yeah.
I'm sure they're all jazzed about it. And it sounds like the Children and Family Emmys, the ceremonies moved to March. So
okay.
I saw it as I was scrolling through.
Yeah, I was literally just picking up my phone to look that up because I was like, we should probably tell them that.
Yeah, I just saw it, I think, at the top of this Variety article, which we can link in the show notes. Yeah, I think it said that the ceremony has been moved to March. So it should air pretty soon. Pretty soon near the Emmys, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's weird that March is not that far away because it's...
I know.
the middle of December, quite literally. It's the 15th right now, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to the other thing. I mean, I know we're, well, literally a month behind on this because Rick posted this on my birthday. Thank you, Rick.
Aww.
But I thought it was important to talk about, especially if you guys missed it, and also just to hear our takes on it. But in his November blog update, he did remind us that Wrath of the Triple Goddess is out, as well as Pahua and the Dragon's Secret by Lauren Lee and The Dark Becomes Her by Judy I. Lin, which I need to read that book. That is one of the ones that I was, like, really excited about.
I do recall that.
Yes. and then A Touch of Blood by Sajni Patel is out on February 25th. This is a Drop of Venian companion novel. So, like, he specifically said companion novel, not sequel. So I'm really interested. I mean, this is a story about Persephone, okay, not about Medusa. So,
gotcha.
It obviously exists in the same world. Maybe we'll get some of the characters from the first one, but really it's a whole different story.
Interesting.
But considering how good the first one was, I'm very excited to read this at some point.
Mm-hmm.
And this may be a shock to you because we have not kept up with the news very well. It was a shock to me this morning when I looked this up. We're getting a new Nico book.
I do remember seeing this.
Okay.
In when it was, like, announced, or was it, is this where he's announcing it? Did I see it a month ago or was it further back?
I think this is when he announced it.
Okay. Yeah. Then I may have just seen a couple of people talking about it. It's so hard. I used to get all of my Rick stuff from Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard now that I don't really use Twitter that much. I don't have the right people, like, liked on my other social media to,
yeah,
like, get these announcement things. But I did catch it somewhere. I remember seeing something about it.
Mm-hmm. I am very unplugged at the moment. And honestly, I regret nothing. I mean, it kind of sucks to, like, get this news a month late. But, you know, it's either that or my mental health, and I think I'll try to keep my mental health under control.
Hey.
We'll figure out the rest.
Mm-hmm.
So, specifically on the blog, he writes, after so much success and love for The Sun and the Star, the Nico D'Angelo adventure I co-authored with Mark Ashiro, I'm delighted to announce that Mark and I have written a sequel about Will and Nico. Not just we are going to.
We've written it. It's done.
The second book came from an impromptu conversation Mark and I had during the Sun and the Star tour when we started riffing during a mic check about wild adventures Nico and Will might have in the future. One of those ideas was so fun and so absolutely bonkers that we couldn't not write it. I can't tell you anything else right now, not the title or the subject matter or the release date, but the manuscript is finished. So I would expect more information shortly after the new year. Hopefully Mark and I will also be able to do a tour, but again, it's too early to know any details yet.
Not only did they just magically come up with this idea, they just decided to write it.
Yeah.
And then we'll figure out the rest later.
That's between May and November.
Right?
That's crazy. Mean, that's like a pretty quick turnaround, I feel like.
Clearly, they write well together.
Yes.
Like, clearly, this was a good experiment for the both of them, and they were like, absolutely, let's keep doing this.
Yeah. And just a reminder, for the first book, Mark wrote the first draft, gave it to Rick. Rick went through it, added, you know, his little bits of his personality and humor and stuff, and maybe changed a few things, but that means, like, they outlined it, Mark wrote it, and we don't know. I would assume Rick's probably gone through it or, like, is going through it right now, and maybe they're just doing final rounds of edits or something like that, but still, that's really exciting.
I mean, if the manuscript is finished, that sounds like Rick, they've written it, they've locked it, this is the story, it's done.
They might just be proofing it a few times. Yeah, going, like, through editors just to make sure everything's perfect.
I mean, I love when an announcement of a new story is already done, so,
right?
Like, there's no chance that something's gonna happen and they won't get it finished, or, you know, it's locked, it's done, so eventually we will get this story, and that's amazing.
Yeah. But I am so curious about what they're going to write about, especially because he said the idea was fun and bonkers. And I mean, going into the underworld itself was pretty bonkers, but it was also really heavy in a lot of ways. So I'm wondering if this one's maybe not going to be as heavy, which I wouldn't mind. I mean, I love Mark's take on mental health and how he kind of opened up both Nico and Will in that, like, area. But I would also be down for just kind of a fun, ridiculous ride.
I am hoping that this is a lighter story. Not that there was anything wrong with Sun and the Stars, because it was fantastic. But because that book was so heavy and a little bit dark and, you know, I would love to watch those two go through something just absolutely insane, but not quite as heavy. Like, it could still have end of the world kind of, you know, stuff going on,
yeah.
But, like, I would love to see them, like, not be at odds with each other for most, you know what I mean? Like, them being on the same page and off doing something else.
Yeah.
I feel like that'd be a really fun
story. Okay, so they visited the underworld, which is like Nico's domain. Now they go to the sun.
I was gonna say. Now they're going
to Mount Olympus.
I was gonna say, now there's something going on Mount Olympus, and they have to be up there, and Nico is like, it is way too bright up here. Yeah. I can't handle this.
Yeah.
Like, how did you handle the underworld? Because this is nonsense. Like, I can see it.
But man, that could be so fun.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like they really could go in so many different directions. So definitely looking forward to that. That one I probably won't put off buying like I have for the Triple Goddess, because I love me some Nico and Will.
Mm-hmm.
We also got a little update on the next senior year adventure book, and he wrote, during the Wrath tour, I also assured fans that yes, I will be writing the third and final senior year adventure about Percy Jackson's quest to get into college, since it would be mean to leave the guy hanging after getting 2 out of 3 godly letters of recommendation. Spoiler. Just kidding. We knew that was happening. That book will not be out next year, however, because I have been working on other projects, namely the Nico book I mentioned above, and our various television adaptation endeavors. But it will be written as soon as I can get to it.
So basically, I would imagine the following fall. Like, knowing Rick's kind of procedure and how he gets through things, if he spent most of this year writing the second Nico book, working on other adaptation stuff, he'll probably, my guess is, start in January or February and get that next one written.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, not this coming fall, because he's already got a book that can come out that fall.
Mm-hmm.
It'll probably be the following
fall. I wonder, if the Nico book is done, because usually he's pretty consistent with his releases either being in May or, like, September.
Yeah.
/ October?
Beginning of
but
October.
But basically, from what I remember, those are usually when he puts books out. Even when he was doing 2 a year, that was kind of how it was.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing that maybe the Nico book will come out, it's 2024, fall 2025.
Okay.
I think that would be a pretty good, to get everything geared up and ready for it.
Yeah.
Probably fall 2025. Which means, yeah, I mean, depending, we could get the next senior year adventure May 2026, but I also wouldn't be surprised if it was fall 2026.
Same, especially with the Percy show, plus we know there are other adaptations that they've been playing with,
mm-hmm.
things that have gotten greenlit and then not greenlit, and other people pick it up and they have to try it, you know. So I think there's a lot of things in the air that we probably don't even know about that he's working on writing
yeah.
for. So, yeah, I would imagine with all of that going on, in addition to actually wanting to write books, probably fall 26 would be my guess.
Yeah. Which, I'm okay with that. I mean...
One book a year on top of everything else is still a lot.
Yeah, it really is. And it sounds like he's really got... Because remember, I'm trying to dig back in those memory files that are very dusty these days. But, like, he was writing the Irish series. He was writing something else, too. He had, like, a couple other things that he was tossing around, plus several adaptations. Like, the man is busy.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, I'll wait. I don't think anybody out there who's been around this long is gonna be upset about waiting.
We will eagerly, you know, await his next blog post where he tells us more about whatever's coming up.
Yeah.
And we will take it in stride and be excited about whatever is next on the horizon.
Yeah, and speaking of TV show updates, he writes, there are many months of filming yet to do, and then many months of post-production, but having read and weighed in on all the season 2 scripts, I'm confident this season will be even better, bigger, funnier, faster, and wilder than season 1. And that just got me really excited.
I mean, this Book two is so much... It's even more focused on the kids. Yeah. I feel like, because they're kind of on their own for more of it. Then the first book, he kind of hops from Olympian to, you know, like with Ares, and he's dealing with, you know, all the different gods that he kind of comes across on that first adventure. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of adults
and kind of... And this is an unsanctioned quest.
Right.
On Percy's part. Yeah. So yeah, that he is, like, more on his own.
So I feel like this one might be wilder and a little crazier because it's not, oh, I have to go to this god and get this thing and move on. Like, he's kind of trying to catch up and help out, you know, all of that. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I feel like this one has the potential to be a little nuts.
Yeah, and considering the success of the first season, they probably got a little bit of a boost to the budget. I mean, they can go a little bit bigger in a lot of ways this time around. I know he mentioned in this blog post that he has seen the chariot race scene and that it was very good. And I also read on Instagram that Lynn has already filmed his parts as Hermes.
Nice.
Which he was like, I don't think this is a spoiler because Hermes is literally right at the beginning of the book.
Right, yeah.
And they might not stick to that 100%, but we know Hermes was...
He'll be in there somewhere.
Yeah, he was the catalyst for a lot of what happens in book two, and that part ends up being very important later on because of Luke. Yeah. So, I just, you know, better, bigger, funnier, faster, wilder. I'm so ready for it. It's going to be really, really exciting. He also writes, as for other TV projects, as I say so often, there's nothing I can share right now, but things are happening behind the scenes on a number of different fronts. I'll need to wait until progress is further underway to announce more details. One of the reasons you won't see me online hardly at all these days is that I am offline working on a bunch of projects at once, which I hope you will enjoy, and really, that's a better place for me to be. Same. I would rather be in my little cocoon writing than online and just getting inundated with everything that's out there right now.
I will say, kind of pulling myself back a little from social media, and I've been playing my video games and reading my books and watching documentaries and learning random things has been so much better for my mental health than some of the other things that I was doing before, like doom scrolling for 3 hours after my husband goes to bed because I am a late night person, and just sitting on the couch and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and feeling worse and worse about the world. Yeah. So I 100% am with Rick on this one. Sometimes it's really good to unplug and let that social media craziness just kind of be separate.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what projects he's working on. Clearly, Kane Chronicles, because that fell through at Netflix, right?
I'm pretty sure the option ran out.
Yeah,
from what I remember.
Like, they're still planning on developing it, maybe finding a different home for it.
That would be my guess, yeah. Because with the success of Percy, I'm curious what, you know, other studios, like, you know, Amazon and whatnot, may have reached out about some of these works that are now available. Yeah. So, like, you know... I would be shocked if at some point someone wasn't trying to adapt Sun and the Star. Mm. I'd be shocked if someone didn't pick up, because didn't the option on The Deep?
That's still going.
That's Disney.
Yeah, that's because they're making it a movie.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
So honestly, that's probably a big thing that he's working on.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I know he was working on Daughter of the Deep as well as Kane Chronicles at one point. Yeah. That's probably moved on, but...
And his Irish short story was going to get something.
Something. Yeah, there was something going on with that, too. Plus, you know, with the new Percy series, like, you never know what could be going on with that,
I mean, I'm always... Because I think he's been talking about, last I remember, they were talking about Magnus in a very vague, general sense.
Like, maybe someday.
I would be super down for. And I know a lot of people would love to see that animated. We've talked about that before, so...
Also, could you imagine, like, these three books, the Chalice of the Gods, Wrath of the Triple Gods, like, those would be a fun animated series,
too. Yeah, because that's a little bit more, like, intimate, like, a little bit smaller.
Yeah.
That could be, like, a special. Like
right.
A, you know, not necessarily a holiday special, but something along those lines.
Yeah. Like, I feel like that could be a fun little... Mm-hmm. thing to toss in there, too. Yeah. So, you never know. You never
know. By the way, have you seen any of the pictures of Walker from season one to season two and how much he's grown? That child is tall.
I think I saw a picture that someone had mocked up of, like, season one him versus where he was at the, like while they were doing press for season one or something. Okay. So I don't know if I've seen the season two pictures yet, but, like, yes, the child is, like,
yeah,
feet taller.
Yeah, it was quite shocking.
Yeah.
But, you know, good for him, I guess, for growing. I don't know.
Heavy growth spurt, Walker.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. But all of that is super exciting, and I am really interested to see what comes out. We'll just stick around, see what comes out of the official channels, and discuss it as it happens. Hopefully we'll get news sooner than later. He said after the new year for that Nico book we might get more information. Very curious what the title will be.
Yeah.
And how it will play into the book, because that was a very significant part of the first one. So
the star and the sun.
I think they could probably do a little better than that, but
I'm kidding. Yeah. That would be a ridiculous title. Plus, how would you ever remember which one was, like, first?
I know,
anyway?
Right? And if they write a third one, what would they... And
Sun, I was gonna say... And Sun the Star. Star, Sun the... And, like, yeah, no. That would get a little bit insane.
But we are back once again now to discuss Chalice of the Gods, Chapter 22 and Chapter 23. I think it was a good idea to do two.
Yeah, because honest to God, both of these are pretty short.
Yeah.
Like, there's not a ton... I think that's just the story, this book.
Yeah.
Like, there are short chapters. There's not a ton going on in each chapter until you get to, like, where they're with a god for some reason. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it's like, this chapter's huge.
And it's another sort of, like, transition...
Yeah.
Couple of chapters where we don't get some, like, major plot going forward, but we get more, like, emotional things. We get more, like, basically how people, yeah, are feeling and
yeah,
anticipation of what they're about to do next.
Well, because at the end of chapter 21, we know that they're gonna see each other on Monday to go investigate Gary. And, spoiler alert, by the end of these two chapters, it's still not Monday.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it's kind of, you know, these two chapters happen before they go to find out what's going on at Washington Square Park. So, we will start here with Chalice of the Gods, Chapter 22, entitled, I Get a Cupcake and a Surprise. okay, so this chapter is all about dinner with the Blowfisses,
yeah,
which I just
love. And I love that it's specifically Sally Jackson Blowfiss.
I know.
And
she hyphenated.
Like, yeah.
She, like, she couldn't just become Sally Blowfiss. She is,
yeah,
Sally Jackson Blowfiss, which we appreciate. We find out from Percy that Annabeth brings cupcakes because she, being Annabeth, cannot just have a free period. When she's basically ready to graduate, she has so many credits, and she's taking a full class load, and she had one class spot open, and rather than just take a study hall and use that time to, you know, keep up with her schoolwork, no, 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 she had to start a new adventure, and so she's taking beginning culinary design.
I love that. I love that for her.
And I also love that he's like, she's been experimenting with cupcakes, but I'm pretty sure by the end of this class, she's going to be building the Acropolis out,
yeah,
of cake. Like, you know, that sounds like Annabeth to me. He makes a point to note that the cupcakes she brings to this dinner are green with purple sprinkles.
Yes.
Because blue foods are sacred.
Do you have a theory as to why she chose green and purple?
No, but I will say it reminded me of, like, Medusa and the drop of venom. Like, everything was green and purple in that book. So
yeah,
my mind immediately went to, like, I wonder if this has something to do with Medusa, which... I don't have a real reason other than the color scheme for that.
So, my theory, because I don't think we're spoiling anybody with what happens in this chapter, the fact that Sally's pregnant, she doesn't make blue food, so she can't make blue and pink cupcakes, so she makes green and purple.
Oh,
That's my theory. I don't know if that's true, but that's the only thing that made sense
that's
to me.
That's cute. Yeah. I could see it.
Yeah.
I could see it. Like, she doesn't want to make... She doesn't make blue, so she couldn't do blue and pink.
Right.
How would she have known, though?
She's Annabeth. Because that's my other thing, is if she made those cupcakes because... If that's the reason why she made them green and purple, she knew before tonight.
Right. She would have had to have.
Yeah.
But how would she have known?
She's Annabeth.
Yeah. She's Annabeth. That is so true. Yeah. Like, all it would take is Sally saying one thing that was slightly...
And then she starts noticing everything else that's a little bit different.
And she's like, I can't believe Percy hasn't noticed. But I'm not telling him because this is his mother's business, not mine. But I'm going to make cupcakes.
Yeah.
And she's going to know exactly what... I also thought it was cute that he, like, thinks it's a little brave of Annabeth to bring dessert because his mom is, like, queen of desserts. But
yeah.
It's cute that Sally is so excited by Annabeth's cupcakes. Like,
yeah.
It's just, I love
and,
it.
And, I mean, of course they're going to be amazing.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And it's very cute just seeing them, like, Annabeth and Percy showing up for dinner, you know. It's cute that that's a thing.
Because
Annabeth can't go to San Fran to see her dad, because he's in San Fran, wasn't he? Like, she can't just pop over there anytime she wants, so it's nice that she has the Jackson Blowfist family to kind of give her that little family atmosphere.
And Percy specifically mentions how much she adores Sally, and probably because Athena was a little bit of an absent parent, like how much it means to her that Sally has embraced her and everything.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Percy greets his mom and then starts talking to Paul, who is definitely nervous about something. And it's hard to tell at first what exactly he's nervous about. Percy remarks that, like, he's putting papers away and he's just acting kind of squirrely and weird. Percy notices that his mom is drinking sparkling water instead of wine, which this is the point at which I went, oh.
Yeah.
Like, it's clear to anyone else, but because this is Percy Jackson, he doesn't exactly know what that means. But he does remark on his mom not drinking wine with their Italian meal. It's like, hey, mom. You usually have your vino. And I love that she doesn't, like, beat her on the bush at it either.
Yeah.
As soon as he points that out, she's like, well, I was going to talk to you about that.
And he was like, you were going to talk to me about wine?
And, of course, Annabeth already has figured it out. I assumed she figured it out sitting at the table. Like, the minute she saw Sally with water, she's like, oh, I know what's going on. But you are not wrong that she may have had it all figured out and showed up to this meeting going, this might be the day.
Yeah.
So we, of course, learn that Sally is pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm so happy for her and Paul.
Yeah.
It's a cute. Percy takes a minute to take in this information and then scares Paul with his enthusiasm as he leaps out of his chair and Paul is closest to him. So he hugs him first and it is all very frightening, as I would imagine. And Percy remarks something about, like, I think they thought I was going to make all the plumbing explode in the building. It only happened once, guys. Like, yeah, very Percy reaction to that. But then he also, of course, hugs his mom and congratulates her. And I'm very glad that this is the response that Percy has. Like, I mean, his mom is precious to him and their relationship is precious to him. And I like that he is not at all threatened by the idea of a Paul and Sally child entering the...
I think that, you know, for a lot of different reasons, like, he's just happy his mom is happy. If this is what she wants, he's going to be supportive. But also, I do think it helps that he is so much older. Like, he's, like... he's 17.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, that is obviously a big age difference between siblings, but I think knowing everything that his mom went through to raise him, I think he really understands that her being able to raise a non-demigod child is really, I mean, that's probably something that she's looking forward to in a way that doesn't undermine what she went through with Percy. Like, I don't think he necessarily feels bad because that wasn't his choice either.
Yeah.
But I think he understands that, like, this is kind of a big deal.
Well, and to, like, raise a child where your biggest concern is, like, is keeping them out of mortal trouble.
Yeah.
Like, you're not worrying about other godly trouble that's stirring that you can't do anything about.
Mm-hmm.
You literally just have to keep the child from sticking their fingers in the electric. You know, like, that's got to be easier for her than worrying about Percy all the time and trying to hide him from the monsters and having to live with Gabe because he dulled Percy's, you know, smell and, like, all of these things she went through to keep Percy safe. And, it's Sally. It was worth it. I know she thinks it's worth it. But it's really nice that she's going to get a chance to raise a child that she may not have to have as much fear for as she did for Percy.
Yeah.
And I know he's excited about that too. You know, you can tell.
Mm-hmm.
But Percy does have some apprehension about this, which we kind of get when he walks Annabeth to the subway after dinner. We get to see that Percy is nervous, not about the child coming into his life and having a brother or sister, but he's nervous that he's going to miss everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so cute because as an older sibling myself, I can say my youngest brother is 10 years my junior. And so being 10 years old, I was in the fourth grade when he was born. And by the time I got to high school, he was 6 or 7. So, like, those are the years where you're, like, learning things and becoming a person, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, when I went to college, he was just 10 or 12 years old or whatever, you know? So it's, like, it was a thing. Like, I was worried about, like, missing out on Brandon becoming a person and, like, how, you know, I didn't miss his first steps or his first word, but I missed basketball games and mm-hmm. him, you know, graduating eighth grade or, you know, that sort of thing. So I did miss a few things in his growing up because I was growing up myself. So I kind of feel for Percy in this moment.
Yeah.
I have that, like, older sibling, like, being removed enough that they almost feel it's not just your brother or sister. It's a young life that you're watching, like, grow
yeah.
up.
Yeah. And I also love that that was literally the first thing Sally said was, this will not change your plans to go to New Rome University, because she knows how much he wants to go. And I think she also knows how much he wants to stay because of that. But she wanted to make sure that, like, none of this will affect you and you can come home as often as you want to. And I thought that was really, really great. It's just so obvious how much they know each other. And I love seeing that.
Well, and the good news is with, like, iris messages and normal technology, if they mm-hmm. decide to embrace some of that, he would be able to, like, FaceTime or see
yeah.
them, not just hear them, not just send messages or emails or whatever. They can also, like, see each other on a regular basis,
yeah.
too. So
that's cool.
So, yeah, Annabeth is really, she makes a point to point out to Percy that she's happy that he's excited for Sally and Paul. With all the chaos with her family and her stepbrothers, like, that, we all know how that went for her at the beginning, and that it's complicated, but I like that Annabeth is supportive as well. Like, she's happy that Percy is happy about this.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily something you needed to address right away, because I would imagine Annabeth would be happy for Sally and Percy, no matter what is going on in her own head about, you know, siblings and all that. But it was really nice to see her kind of give that moment to Percy, and she laughed about him learning to change diapers.
Yeah.
I would, you know, Commander of the Sea, I wonder how that gets involved with changing diapers. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, baby has a blowout, you just put him in the tub and...
Yeah.
Water power, like, you know what I mean? It could be
Mom,
fun.
No hands.
Right? It could be fun. It could be fun. You never know. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up this chapter. It's pretty short, sweet, but again, a really cute moment, and I'm glad we included this chapter. I'm interested to see this child and how everything goes on from here.
Yeah.
So, favorite lines. Karen, I'll let you do yours first.
Mine was right at the very end of the chapter when Percy is kind of thinking about, like, okay, what's going to happen now? And thinking about him going to school, thinking about him having a baby sibling and all this other stuff. And he goes, multiple positive outcomes? Wow, there was a first time for everything.
I gotta tell you, I almost picked that.
Really?
Because I was like, that is hilarious.
Yeah.
Because it's true. Usually there's one positive outcome and 77 negative ones, and they have to figure out a way to get to the happy one. Mine is, sometimes I wondered if Annabeth was open to the idea of marrying me someday only because she was excited about getting Sally Jackson Blowfist as her mother-in-law. Honestly, I couldn't blame her. Because it's true. We would all love Sally in our lives.
Yes. I just had to look up his sister's name because I could not for the life of me remember it.
Yeah,
because I was like, Stella? That doesn't sound right. Ellie? That doesn't sound right. It's Estelle.
Estelle,
so
yes.
I was
that's
like,
it.
Yeah. But yeah, it's because I was just thinking it was really cool. Like, we obviously already knew he was having a sibling if you read the other books, but then to go back and be able to witness the moment he finds out is something really special that Rick added
yeah.
to this book for fans who are going to remember those moments.
Yeah. Yeah, I was, like, purposely not going and reminding myself of all the things we know about his sister. Like, I was like, I know we know all of this,
yeah.
but, like, I'm just going to let this happen and not try and remind myself, oh, yeah, we know this and this and this about, yeah. So, yeah, that's fun. Okay, and then our favorite moments. Mine was Percy scaring Paul
mm-hmm.
with the hug. Like,
that was
cute. But, like, I could see, you know, Walker and some person. I don't know why I picture Paul Rudd, but sure.
No, I think a lot of people do. I think that's a very common thing.
He's just so everyman.
Yeah.
It works. But, like, the two of them sitting at a table and, like, Walker, like, gobsmacked and then just leaping out of his chair and, like, hugging him. Like, I could totally see it.
Yeah.
So, I doubt who knows if we'll ever get that far, but...
That would be pretty cool.
I could see it.
Yeah.
What was your favorite moment?
Mine was the idea of Annabeth building bridges and skyscrapers out of angel food cake, because of course that's what she would do. Absolutely. I love it. Absolutely.
Definitely.
Okay. Maybe one day she'll be on the Great British Bake Off.
That would be really cool.
That would be awesome. They make a reference to that show in Daughter of the Deep, don't they?
I believe so.
Yeah.
I remember that, yeah.
Because I think, like, wasn't it, like, the orangutan? Isn't there orangutan or something?
Oh, yeah.
And he, like,
yeah,
watches it?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like, it's been a while since we read
the,
it, but.
The
ship.
The ship. Is it the ship or the island?
Ooh.
I think it might be the island.
It might be the island, yeah.
Because I think they meet him when they get to the island, and then,
yeah. Because there's a whole, like, laboratory thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
But anyway, that would be cool if Annabeth made it on there someday.
Heck yeah. Okay, so that wraps up chapter 22. Now we're diving into chapter 23, entitled Ganymede Explodes All the Beverages. Okay, so chapter 23 begins Friday morning, so I'm assuming it's the next day, at school. Percy is in class, and he gets called to the guidance office by Eudora, our favorite Nereid, and he... You know, goes down and he's like, I'm not letting her flush me this time. Like, I can't deal with that. I'm not dealing with that today. He's got a whole plan for how he's not going to get flushed, which I appreciated. But Eudora, like, starts off by just asking, like, how are things going? What's going on? And he gets her up to speed on his life. And she doesn't seem, like, super, super interested. But she's basically looking for an update on the Ganymede situation. So he quickly gets to telling her about going to meet Gary in Washington Square Park on Monday, and Eudora goes pale almost immediately and starts recommending community colleges to him, including Hohokus? Hohokus?
Hohokus?
Hohokus? Oh, maybe?
I don't know. This is a real place in New Jersey.
Is it? Okay.
Yes, and they have, like, a trade school, because I think she mentions becoming, like, an engineer or something like that.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, it's a real place with some interesting history. I, like, was looking through the Wikipedia page, but...
Interesting.
Yeah. It looks super made up, but it's not.
Well, I'm wondering if it's, like, Hoboken, like, ho...
That's what I was wondering,
something
too.
Something related to that.
I don't think so. And there's a different Hohokus that doesn't have the hyphens that is a different thing.
Interesting.
I only skimmed because I hate New Jersey on principle, so I didn't want to read about it too much.
Understood, understood.
Yeah.
But yeah, love that. thank you for the fun fact, because I did not look it up, so I appreciate that. Basically, Eudora wants Percy to stay alive, so she's trying to steer him away from this Gary. When Percy asks her who Gary is, she disappears in a whirlpool of green, like, water and leaves kelp scattered behind her. So, Eudora knows who Gary is.
Or
at least has an inkling.
I don't know if Rick is making a commentary on high school guidance counselors and, like, how terrible they are, but she is a terrible guidance counselor.
That could be. That could be, because let's face it, I went to my guidance counselor for my class schedule stuff. I don't think I ever actually want them to guide me anywhere. I did not assume they were there to do that, even though their name is a guidance counselor.
Yeah. I was so angry at my high school guidance counselor because, spoiler alert, I'm a nerd. Been a nerd my whole life. Straight-A student, like, always went above and beyond. That is a point of shame for me. Not pride, because I had no life. But... my guidance counselor told me not to take, like, an advanced class because he didn't think I could do it, despite my fantastic grades and all that other stuff. And I think he might have tried to talk me out of taking physics, and I did anyway, which I hated physics. It was awful. Still got an A in that class because I'm me, so not that I'm holding that grudge 16 years later. It's fine. Yeah. Anyway,
well, my high school guidance counselor was like 85, and everyone, nobody, like, believed she should still have been working, and she barely could handle just giving us our class schedules on time, and, like, yeah, so nobody went to her for anything. There were guidance counselors that people really liked that they would go hang out with and talk to, but it was not mine.
Yeah.
So, you know, that I wonder if maybe this is a little bit of commentary.
Maybe.
I enjoy that. If so, I enjoy that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Eudora is not helpful, but clearly knows who Gary is or knows that something is at Washington State, Washington Square Park, State Park. Like, she's got some inkling of what's coming ahead, and she wants Percy to stay alive. So, mm-hmm. like, she knows it's bad.
I mean, good for her for wanting him to stay alive, but also not giving him any information isn't going to help with that.
Right, that's not the way to help. To just disappear and get out of... Yeah, no, that's not.
Okay, Dumbledore. Sorry. Another grudge I've held for years.
We're not bitter about that one.
Yeah.
We all are. It's okay. So Percy leaves the guidance office and, I assume, goes back to class. And eventually goes to lunch. And at lunch, he's sitting at his table and all of a sudden hears his glass or his drink being refilled. And he just goes, "Hi, Ganymede."
Yeah, he just knew.
The minute he, you know, there's signs. Put it that way. Ganymede is anxious for news about his chalice and asks for Percy for an update. Funny that both of these, like, Greek figures ask him for an update the same day.
Mm.
Eudora's like, "Percy, I want an update." Ganymede, yeah. "Percy, I want an update." Like, it's interesting to me that all of a sudden everyone's like, "Hey, what's going on? Tell me more. You know, where are you?"
I wonder if that's because they just visited the River Ellison.
Maybe.
Or maybe coincidence. Maybe they're impatient.
Sounds about right.
All of the above.
Sounds about right. So Percy updates Ganymede on the plan to go to Washington Square Park and find out who this Gary guy is. Ganymede doesn't know who Gary is. He assumes it's one of his enemies because they stole his cup. So, but no real help here either. There's mention of God talk,
mm-hmm.
meaning like, it's an app that the gods use, like TikTok, and that made me giggle. Loved that. But yeah, Ganymede reminds Percy that while the impending deadline for having the chalice is looming, it's a week away or so, Zeus could call for his chalice at any time, and Ganymede is really, really nervous that Zeus is going to need it today, in an hour, in 10 minutes, and he wants Percy to know, just like, you can't keep putting this off, dude. You got to find this thing. I need it now. And I mean, that's worth noting because Zeus is unpredictable, but
yes.
You would like to believe that Percy has a week to get this done.
Yeah.
So after that, Ganymede goes and refills all the cups that he accidentally emptied at one point during their conversation, just in panic or whatever. And so Ganymede goes off to do his duty and Percy finishes his lunch and then later that day visits the library, which is just cute.
Yeah. At one point he starts ranting about libraries and being dyslexic and how difficult it is for him. And then he says, like, "Thank you for listening to my TED talk." And it's just so funny that, like, the God talk reference and the, you know, listening to my TED talk thing, it's just very indicative of, like, the language of these days and, like, how kids say things and stuff, and the fact that Rick is very much on that, like, mm-hmm. and you can tell, like, his influence from social media, and we notice that a lot throughout his books, and I just find it very interesting because it kind of dates things in some ways, but also keeps it, like, very relevant when you're first reading it. And I noticed it a lot in the Apollo books because Apollo is very much on top of, like, all the latest trends and stuff. And so, I thought it was kind of funny.
It's like, you know, dating a book isn't necessarily a bad thing. Yeah. If it sets it in a specific time period for a reason, like, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing to keep mm-hmm. the technology and the trends and the, you know, the fads in that book.
Mm-hmm.
It gives it a point of view. Like, yeah, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
Definitely.
So, yeah, Percy visits the library, I think just for some peace and quiet, but also he knows while he's there, he can do a little bit of research and try to figure out who Gary is, since they're waiting until Monday to go anyway. He gets a couple of books on Greek mythology. He does, you know, digs through the stacks and finds whatever he thinks might be helpful. And he reads through them and doesn't really find any leads. He kind of mentions the same things we did when we were brainstorming Gary and talking about how, like, Ganymede is close to Gary, but that doesn't work. And Geryon is kind of close. And, you know, like, there's some things that sound like they could be near the word Gary, but mm-hmm. nothing that leaps out at you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he heads home. He's hoping he's going to get a good night's sleep. So that when they leave on Monday to go, he'll be well-rested and able to handle whatever may lie ahead. And we find out at the very end of the chapter that he may not have gotten the best night's sleep.
So, remember how the last chapter ended on such a positive note? It was only a matter of time.
Yeah, this one's less positive, but I'm curious why he doesn't get sleep. Yeah. Like, is it because someone comes to visit? You know, it could be a million things. Yeah. I did not read ahead, so I have no idea why he doesn't sleep well. But that wraps this one up. So we're going to do favorite lines and favorite moments. I'll let Karen do her line again.
Because ours are literally next to each other. Yeah. I'm glad that you took the second half because I loved the first half, but felt like I needed to include the second half for, like, more context. So this works out perfectly.
It was the opposite for me. I liked the second half, but wanted to include the first half. And I was like, it's too long. I'm cutting it off here. So this just works.
We're so good at this. So mine is, but as I've been told many times before, God simply didn't do that sort of thing. It was against the great cosmic rules in goditude or something.
And then mine continues, anybody could steal your divine stuff. Only a hero could get it back for you. And by hero, I mean me, the schmuck who needed recommendation letters. Oh, Percy. I love you so much. Yeah, no, these were some good lines in there. Love it, love it. Okay, and then our favorite moments. Mine was Eudora poofing at the mention of Gary. Like, I kind of was hoping she would have some advice or some help for him. Like, I really hope just even the barest mention or something she accidentally let slip or something. But no, she was zero help and literally just peaced out the minute he said his name. So,
can I say, having already read this book, because remember, I've read this one, you haven't.
Yes.
There is something in this chapter that... it's not a clue as much as a reference that you understand way better having read the book already.
Interesting.
So if we can remember, I'll try to remember once we figure out who Gary is to go back and bring this up. But I was like, oh, it's kind of right there. not that it would help you with the name, more just what's going on.
Interesting. So, okay.
Yeah.
For all you people who've already read this book and are laughing at me right now, it's hard. It's hard to see it when it's right in front of your face and you don't know it's there.
And it's not obvious. if you didn't know, like, it's not obvious.
Okay. What was your favorite moment?
Mine was Percy wanting to help Ganymede become mortal again because Ganymede never got a choice. And remember, Percy had a choice to become immortal and decided not to. And Ganymede never got that. And I just really loved that, like... yes, Percy is doing this for the recommendation letters, but he really feels for Ganymede, which is difficult for him. I mean, Ganymede is a god, and Percy does not have the best track record with gods, but it really does stink that Ganymede was stolen away because he was pretty to look at, and he never got a choice of becoming the official cupbearer to Zeus. And so if Percy can make his life a little bit easier, like, that is part of the motivation here. And I just thought that was really sweet on his part.
It is. It goes to the heart of Percy, you know. It's one thing if you've had a say or if something's gone wrong and it's, you know, you at least had some agency in your fate. With so many of the Greek stories, there are so many characters who had no choice and didn't do anything to deserve what comes, you know, to them. So... yeah, I like that he kind of keeps it real, and it's like, I feel terrible for this person who didn't have a choice in how they ended up.
Yeah.
Prophecy Radio is produced by Subjectify Media. You can contact Prophecy Radio directly on Instagram at Prophecy Radio Podcast or email us at prophecyradiopodcast@gmail.com. You can find us and our episodes on Spotify, Apple, or any of your favorite podcast platforms. Please consider leaving us a review or a rating. 5-star reviews help others to find us, and we really appreciate them. You can leave us questions, comments, or ideas for episodes or content you want to hear from us in either of these places. We do have some feedback this week. I'm going to throw it to Karen because we had some comments on Spotify that we missed.
Yeah, I mean, people have been leaving comments on Spotify for a while, which I didn't even know you could do that, to be
honest. I don't have Spotify, so I'm bad at Spotify. I'm so sorry.
I do have it, but I basically just listen to, like, the same, like, three of my playlists all the time and don't really interact with a lot of other things. But Wings of Legends on Spotify has left us multiple comments over several months, as have some other people. But on the most recent episode, they said, "So happy y'all are back. Love this podcast." And I just really appreciated that. Thank you for taking the time to leave that. And I'll try to get better, because we do get emails when people leave comments, I think. So I will try to get better at checking those.
And if you leave us a comment somewhere that we don't usually talk about, feel free to email us and say, like, "Hey, I've been leaving comments on such and such," and we will go check them. We are not always good at knowing all the places to look for things. Yeah. So, yeah. If you're a regular comment leaver and we've missed you, please let us know. Because mm-hmm. we want to thank you and congratulate you for being an awesome person.
Yeah.
And then we also got an email back in March that we feel really badly for having missed.
Oops.
And so I'm going to throw it to Karen for that one, too.
Yes. Thank you, Kyle, for leaving this email for us. Sorry it took us so long. This is, like, right around the time we kind of disappeared, so...
Yeah.
At least it wasn't you specifically. I swear it wasn't you specifically. Because this is a really interesting email. So Kyle writes, "Hello, I've just started listening to your podcast." Oh, man.
We apologize.
Yes. And I'm really enjoying it. I've gotten up to the end of your recaps of Sea of Monsters, which is good because that means over the last several months, maybe he's...
Still had a couple of books yes. to get through. Yeah. That's good.
I had a suggestion for a topic. I don't know if you have already covered something like this since I have a lot of catching up to do on the podcast. I was thinking of assigning a different museum / gallery / cultural institution in the modern world to each of the 9 muses. Here are my 9. I did try to stay in North America, which is the seat of the West in the books, but you could easily pick any in the world. First of all, fantastic idea.
That is really cool.
Incredible. Love it so much. Never would have thought about this. Genius.
Same, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm going to read through his suggestions. So okay. For Calliope, who is the muse of epic poetry, the Library of Congress.
Makes sense.
Solid.
Lots really of good. Great poetry and writing in there.
Yeah. Clio, history, the Smithsonian. Again, great choice.
Yes, yes. Yes.
Now we're getting into names I'm going to have trouble pronouncing. Polyhymnia, which is the sacred song. The Tabernacle Choir. I don't know what that is.
You've heard of them.
Oh, okay.
I'm assuming you're talking about the Mormon Tabernacle Choir.
Oh,
unless there's another
say,
Tabernacle Choir.
Isn't tabernacle like a religious term?
Typically, yes. Okay. And like the Mormon Tabernacle Choir is well known.
Oh.
Like they do, like they used to have like recordings.
Oh, okay.
Like it's like a 4-part, from what I remember, it's like a 4-part, you know, soprano, alto, tenor, bass, like harmony kind mm-hmm. of big choir. But they did so many things for so many oh. pop culture-y events and things that they were well known for quite a while. I don't know if I've heard much about them in the last like decade or so, but they were very prevalent at one point.
Okay. Very interesting. Euterpe, who is music, the Metropolitan Opera House. I like that.
I feel like that is probably the more, like, traditional, if you're going traditional music.
Mm-hmm.
But you could also do something like Radio City Music Hall.
Yeah, that's
which has
true.
Hosted so many different kinds of things. Or,
yeah.
like, some of the legendary concert venues, like, the Apollo or something like that. The Apollo Theater in, is that D.C., I think? Or is that New York?
Oh,
I can never remember.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, like, something like that, those, like, legendary music halls would be really cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the opera house would definitely be
yes.
one of them.
Terpsichore? Ooh. Dance. The American Ballet Theater.
Okay. I
feel like that's cool.
Don't know a ton about dance, so that I will take your word on that one.
Yeah. Erato, who is erotic poetry, and he said, this one was difficult as erotic poetry has a bad rap in the Western world, and I didn't want to go with something crass and exploitative, so I decided on Harlequin Enterprises, the romance publishing company in Toronto, Canada.
Mm.
Interesting. I like that.
I mean... Part of me wants, and maybe this is irreverent, I don't know, but something, part of me wants to use, like, fan fiction.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Like, make it a digital museum. Like, the idea
yeah.
of, like, honestly, fans taking on the eroticism of normal fandom and, like,
mm.
kind of, you know, sometimes it's a little more reverent and sometimes it's a little more irreverent. But, like, I feel like that kind of has been taken over by... the masses mm-hmm. at this point, rather than it being a, like, well-regarded aspect of art at this point.
Yeah.
I am a romance reader, and I can tell you, you know, a lot of those books are somewhat explicit and whatever. It doesn't bother me, but it is one of those things in our culture that's, like, taboo still.
Yeah, definitely. But there are some, like, one of my favorite publishing houses for romance is Sourcebooks, because mm-hmm. they really do put out a lot of the books and authors that I love.
Mm-hmm.
So I might go with that. Or I was trying to think, like, I don't know, like, burlesque came to mind, but that's not always paired with, like, poetry or, like, something written.
But it is kind of, like, an elevated, like, burlesque is respected.
Yeah.
More than other forms of eroticism. Yes. So, like, you're not wrong there.
So if you could, like, somehow pair the two together, I feel like that could be really interesting.
Also, I want to shout out all of the romance-specific bookstores in the United States.
Yes.
Because that would also be a fun way to kind of create a museum for
yeah.
them, because they have been popping up more and more across the U.S. in the last 5 to 10 years.
Is that one in L.A. still open?
Yeah.
Oh,
and they
okay.
have a New York location now
oh,
as well.
Cool.
In the city, I'm pretty sure. And then there's one that opened in Chicago or near Chicago.
Is that Ripped Bodice?
No, the one in Chicago is not. The one in New York and L.A. is Ripped Bodice.
Right, yeah.
yeah.
Okay.
There's one that opened in Ohio, and I can't remember where it is. It's not near Toledo. It's not near Northwest Ohio. But I want to say it's near maybe Dayton.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, there's a couple. They've been popping up more and more. It's like seeing one or two of them have significant success has allowed a lot of people who want to give romance their due to get small shops open, small
mm-hmm.
independent shops. Because, I mean, as much as romance keeps the book industry rolling, it also gets no respect, and it, places like Barnes & Noble, it gets 3 shelves when it's honestly, like, a quarter of the publishing empire
mm-hmm.
is romance books at this point.
Yeah.
So it's crazy how small the section is for romance when there's so much getting published on any given
yeah.
day.
And let me tell you, as somebody who publishes on Amazon and knows a little bit of the behind the scenes, like, as a thriller author, the people that I work with who publish my books and my co-writer know a lot more about what's going on in Amazon. And when I tell you, romance has changed the game. For somebody who's been writing, not me, my co-author, for 10 plus years, romance has changed the game so significantly that we've had to pivot out the way that we market our books because of it. And nobody can quite do it like romance. And especially because of TikTok. It's changed everything, so.
I will say, the way TikTok moves books these days
mm-hmm.
is insane. It's
wild.
Crazy how things come in and out of Vogue, and yeah, it's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But that's interesting to see that.
Oh, yeah.
I will say the last, and this is gonna age me, the last, like, 15 years has kind of been a romance renaissance. Like,
yes.
For a while, romance was the books you didn't talk about, the little Harlequin, you know,
yeah.
paperbacks that were shoved in a corner of the library and
or like
talked about
the Nora Roberts books that my mom always read that I had no interest in reading.
Right?
Yeah.
But the last, like, 15 years or so, there's been a resurgence of romance, and it encompasses everything and
yeah.
everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Every subgenre of romance is, what you know, like, whether you're looking for suspense or a specific trope or whatever,
yeah.
romance has, like, everything
yeah.
now. It's crazy.
We're not passionate about this
no,
at all.
No, not at all. We are not interested in erotic, right, whatever the goddess.
Poetry, yeah. Erato.
That does not relate to us in the slightest.
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
I love it.
Okay, so 3 more. We have Mel Pomaney, who is the Muse of Tragedy, the Stratford Theater Festival. I don't know anything about this, so I'm gonna be honest.
I don't know a lot about that.
Talia, the Muse of Comedy. Perfect answer. Rockefeller Center, the home of SNL.
I mean,
I love it. It's great. There's also that in Chicago, that one, like,
the Electric, what is it? The Electric, no, that's not it.
It's a really well-known.
Yeah.
Didn't Starkid, a bunch of people from Starkid went there.
Well, and it's kind of the birthplace of a lot of SNL people, too.
Yeah.
Like, they all kind of grit, oh, it's gonna bug me now, hold on.
Because I think, don't they, like, do a lot of, like, improv stuff?
Second City.
Yes, Second City, that's what it is, yep.
It's like, Second City, I knew there was one, and there's one in, I think, like, L.A.
Oh, okay.
That's also not as prevalent. Second City is where a lot of great comedians kind of come out, especially improv people. They come out of Second City. But there's another one in LA that's a little smaller that also has produced some really, really funny people.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
And then lastly, we have Urania, the muse of astronomy, and he's chosen Mauna Kea Observatory in Hawaii. I hope I pronounced that right. Which I know nothing about, but Hawaii is a very good place to have an observatory, and also, I think, a good place to choose for this.
Heck yeah. Like, so much less light pollution, so you've got the ability to actually see things.
Yeah. So Kyle says, I thought this was a fun exercise with so many possibilities. For example, you could use the Grand Ole Opry or Capitol Records for Utopia instead. Looking forward to catching up on the rest of the podcast. Sincerely, Kyle. You're going to be so surprised when...
I really hope you're still listening.
Yes, that would be amazing.
Or I hope that you're excited that we're back, even if you just finished listening back in September. I hope that you hear this and get excited. Because honestly,
how lucky
this was...
would he be if he caught up and then we came back after months of being away?
We're back. No, that was a really cool exercise.
That was. And I do love that he chose North America, because I do think that makes sense. But I would love to have some people give us some suggestions for, like, other places.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, the Globe Theater, I think, would be a great choice for something. And there's just, like, so many other things that you could do that I think would be...
Or, like, Abbey Road Studios.
Amazing. Yeah.
Which, so, you know, so many people have recorded in. Like, that would be a cool place, too. And so many options and crazy places across the world. Yeah.
Yeah. That was super fun. That was such a good idea.
Thank you so much, Kyle. We appreciate it. Even if it took us 6 months, 8 months, 9 months to get there, we really, really appreciate it, because that was really fun. Okay, so next time we will be talking about the next two chapters, chapters 24 and 25 of Chalice of the Gods, probably publishing January 1st?
Yes, I mean, we might tack on a couple of days because that is like New Year's and the holidays will have just kind of be wrapping up. So we'll kind of see how it goes, but the tentative plan is January 1st.
So it may be later that week. It may be the beginning of the next week, but it'll come out sometime early January. So you can look for our next episode then. And until then, this is Kristen.
And I'm Karen.
And we're Prophecy Radio signing off. Over and out.